Mandarin，
这里是美国之音的中文广播，现在就开始今天下午6个小时的中文节目。
各位听众，美国之音接下来播报新闻。总部设在堪培拉的澳大利亚战略政策学会于3月1号发表的一份研究报告指出，中国当局把在新疆在教育营中关押的维吾尔族和其他少数民族的公民转移到全国各地，让他们在一些世界知名品牌的工厂中强迫劳动。这份报告估计，2017年至2019年期间，至少有8万多维吾尔人从新疆转移到中国各地的工厂工作，其中一些人直接从拘留营被遣送出来，实际数字可能高得多。在远离家乡的工厂里，他们通常住在隔离的宿舍里，在工作时间外接受有组织的普通话和思想训练，受到持续的监视，并被禁止参加宗教仪式。包括政府文件在内的许多资料表明，这些调来的维吾尔族工人被指派的看护人员监管，行动自由有限，无异于强迫劳动。这份报告呼吁中国允许跨国公司不受限制地进入中国工厂调查任何可能发生的虐待或强迫劳动事件，并要求企业进行审计和人权尽职调查。印第安纳州南本德市前市长皮特·布蒂吉格放弃了在2020年赢得白宫的希望。布蒂吉格的竞选团队星期天晚上宣布，他将退出民主党总统竞选。此前，他在星期六的南凯罗莱纳州初选中令人失望地取得第4名，没有赢得任何党代表票。上个月，布蒂吉格险胜爱荷华州党内投票，又在新汉普什尔州初选中取得了非常接近第1名的成绩，此后他的选情迅速看涨。但伯尼桑德斯咄咄逼人的作风和进步派的思想，以及乔拜登的施政经验和非裔美国人的支持，很快就淹没了布里吉格所传达的温和团结的信息，再加上布里吉格的知名度毕竟不高。布蒂吉格才38岁，他还年轻，在民主党圈子内已经名声赫起，这意味着他不太可能再回到政治默默无闻的状态。与此同时，在本周的超级星期二选举中，在南卡罗莱纳州初选中轻松获胜的拜登将面临桑德斯的挑战，届时将有14个州举行初选，超过33%的党代表票数可供争夺。目前受新冠病毒袭击的国家数量攀升至60多个，全世界的死亡人数至少达到3000人。法国巴黎的卢浮宫是蒙娜丽莎和其他无价艺术瑰宝的家乡。据美联社报道，由于该博物馆的工作人员担心受到来自世界各地游客的传染，卢浮宫被关闭。工作人员还对来自意大利的博物馆工作人员表示关注，他们来到卢浮宫收回在这里借展的达芬奇的作品。卢浮宫是世界上最受欢迎的博物馆，去年共接待游客960万人次，其中近3/4来自国外。上周六，法国政府决定禁止5000人以上的室内公共集会，随后卢浮宫被关闭。在法国，巴黎大主教告诉教区牧师，把圣餐面包放在信徒的手中，而不是他们的嘴里。法国官员还建议人们在问候他人时不要亲吻脸颊。据韩联社报道，韩国2日上午新增新确定的确诊数量476例，累计确诊病例4212例，死亡22例。报道还指出，新增病例当中，大邱市与庆尚北道就占了445例。目前，大邱市的确诊病例3081例，庆尚北道有624例。合计超过3700例，大约占全部病例的87.9%。韩国此次疫情，新天地教会的感染人数就超过2000人。当局表示，有教徒今年1月去过武汉，至于详细情况还在调查当中。韩国军方表示，目前有28名官兵确诊，将动员军医人员与政府联手对抗新冠病毒的战争。各位听众，以上是美国之音的新闻播报，感谢收听，我们将在半点继续播报新闻。
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Moore. Welcome to Functioning in Business.
各位听众好，我是杨晨，欢迎收听商务通英语。
Functioning in Business is an intermediate level business English course with a focus on American business practices and culture.
商务通英语是中等程度的商务英语课程，课程题材以美国的实践和文化为主，通过电台播音室里的采访和绘画讲授美国英语。今天我们要复习本星期的课程，第一课着重谈工作职责。首先请听节目主持人 Elizabeth 同工程师 Mike Epstein 进行的一次访谈。
Welcome to our show. We have a new guest today. His name is Mr. Michael Epstein. Mr. Epstein is Senior Systems Engineer at Advanced Technologies Incorporated. Hello, Mr. Epstein. Thank you for coming to our program.
It's my pleasure. Please call me Mike.
Okay, Mike. Can you tell us a little about Advanced Technologies?
Well, we're located in Sunnyvale, California.
That's in Silicon Valley, right?
That's right. It's about 40 miles south of San Francisco.
And what does your company produce?
We make electronic components for computers.
Where do you sell your products?
We sell our components in domestic markets and also overseas.
You're a systems engineer, is that correct?
That's right.
What are your main responsibilities?
My main job is to reduce production costs. That's how I became involved in the negotiations with International Robotics. My job was to find ways to cut production costs for the factory we were building near San Francisco.
I see. So you thought industrial robots could provide some cost savings?
Exactly.
Mike, as you know, we'll be talking with you, Shirley Graham, and Charles Blake over the next several weeks. We'll be discussing Charles Blake's trip from China to the United States to visit you and Ms. Graham at Advanced Technologies.
Yes, Mr. Blake came to talk to us about International Robotics industrial robots.
And how did you meet Mr. Blake?
I met him in Beijing. I went there to attend a trade show, and he was at the show representing his company. I was interested in the robots his company produces. I thought they might be helpful in our manufacturing process. I invited Mr. Blake to come to Advanced Technologies to talk with us about selling us his robots.
Thank you, Mike. Let's open up the phone lines and see if we have any callers. Caller number one, you're on the air with Functioning in Business.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Epstein, I'm a systems engineer too, and I have a question for you.
Great. Go ahead.
You said that you were involved in a project to build a new factory. How many factories does Advanced Technologies have?
We currently have 4 in the U.S. and 2 abroad.
Where are they located?
Our main factory is in Los Angeles, and we have smaller factories in Northern California.
What about overseas?
We have 1 factory in the Philippines and 1 in Mexico.
I see. Thank you.
Caller number 2, you're on the air.
Thank you. Mr. Epstein, I was wondering what products Advanced Technologies manufactures.
Well, we make electronic components and office computers.
What kinds of electronic components?
Mostly computer related.
I see. Does your company currently use robots on your assembly lines?
Yes, we do. The work has to be very precise.
I see. Thank you very much.
Mr. Epstein, thank you for being on our show.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Let's take a short break.
文化点滴。今天我们要讲的是，在美国，是长期在一家公司任职好，还是经常变换工作好？
Hello again. We're here with Gary Angleton, our business language expert. We have an email question for you, Gary. The question is, in the U.S., is it better to stay with one company or to change jobs?
If you want to be an important executive in a large corporation, it is probably better to change companies at least once or twice. Large corporations hire at least half of their top executives from outside the company. You should try to stay at each job for at least a year, however. Otherwise, it will look bad.
Here's another email question. What should I do if I want to change jobs?
Well, the most important thing is to keep your skills up to date. This is especially important if you aren't young anymore. It is unfortunate, but some employers may think that your knowledge is out of date. Take college classes in your field at night, or on weekends, or even on the internet.
Do you have any other advice?
Yes, stay in close contact with everyone you know in other companies. Send them friendly emails and cards. Ask them for advice and offer yours. Build up your network. This network will be useful if you need their help to move to their company someday.
Thank you, Gary. Let's take a break.
今天的商务对话教我们怎样向别人介绍你自己的工作职责。现在就请听这次培训班上的对话。
Okay, before we get started, let's go around the table and introduce ourselves. My name is Rachel Jones, and I'm a cultural sensitivity trainer. I train executives to understand cultural differences in the workplace. How about you, Dan?
My name is Dan Alvarez.I'm an accountant at Acme Accounting. I prepare tax documents for large and small businesses.
I'm Janine Walters. I'm a sales representative for Ace Department Stores. I handle sales for the Northeastern United States.
My name is George Patowski. I'm general manager at Astro Electronics. We sell TVs, VCRs, radios, that sort of thing. I'm in charge of the sales personnel, and I make sure that our inventory is up to date.
Thank you all for those introductions.
Gary 提示
Welcome back. It's time for Gary's tips. What's your topic for today, Gary?
Today, I'll be talking about describing your job responsibilities. In many situations, you need to describe what you do in your job.In a job interview, for example, you need to be able to state two or three of your main responsibilities. And when you meet other business people at a meeting, a trade show, or even at a party, they may ask you what you do in your job. You should be able to describe what you do in one or two sentences. Think of a clear way to describe what you do. Let's listen again to part of the business dialogue. Listen for the expressions, I train...And I prepare.
My name is Rachel Jones, and I'm a cultural sensitivity trainer. I train executives to understand cultural differences in the workplace. How about you, Dan?
My name is Dan Alvarez. I'm an accountant at Acme Accounting. I prepare tax documents for large and small businesses.
Let's listen to some more of the business dialogue. This time, listen for the phrases,I handle, and I'm in charge of.
I'm Janine Walters. I'm a sales representative for Ace Department Stores. I handle sales for the Northeastern United States.
My name is George Patowski. I'm general manager at Astro Electronics. We sell TVs, VCRs, radios, that sort of thing. I'm in charge of the sales personnel, and I make sure that our inventory is up to date.
We just heard people describing what they do in their jobs. Try writing down what you do in your work. Then think of one or two sentences that clearly describe what you do and practice saying them. Well, that's all we have time for today. I hope today's tips were helpful.
Thanks, Gary.
本星期第二课主要讲怎样介绍你的工作经历。首先是访谈时间。
Our guest today is Mr. Michael Epstein. Hello again, Mike. Thank you for coming back to our program.
Hello again. It's nice to be back.
You said you're a systems engineer at Advanced Technologies. Is that correct?
That's right.
What's your background, Mike?
I have a background in both engineering and business.
I see.Where did you study engineering?
At Stanford. I majored in electrical engineering.
And when did you graduate?
1988. I graduated in 1988.
I see. And what did you do after graduation?
My first job was as an engineer for a small company in San Francisco.
And what were your responsibilities?
I was a quality assurance engineer. I worked for them for just under 2 years.
Why did you leave?
I became more interested in the business side of things, so I decided to go back to school to get my MBA.
Did you go back to Stanford?
Yes, I did. I was married at the time, and my wife was also working in San Francisco, so I didn't want to leave the Bay Area.
When did you get your MBA?
In 1992.
Then what?
Well, I was looking for a position with a medium-sized company. Advanced technology seemed like the right place for me.
And now you are senior systems engineer there?
That's right.
Do you like your work?
Yes, I do. Very much.
What do you do when you're not working, Mike?
Well, I enjoy golf, but I don't get much time to play.
Hello again. We're here with Gary Angleton, our business language expert. Let's look at our email questions, Gary.
All right.
Our first question is, how much vacation do Americans get?
Most American workers get at least 2 weeks vacation. In some companies, workers get longer vacations after a few years. In addition, most companies give their workers some holidays, like Christmas and July 4th, and some days of sick time. Some part-time workers, however, are not paid for vacations.
Thanks, Gary. Our second question is, what is the average work day and work week?
We generally think of an 8-hour day and a 40-hour week as normal. High-level executives, however, are usually expected to work as much as 50 to 60 hours a week because they are paid so much. But at startup companies, people work even more hours, sometimes for very little pay.
Thanks for your comments, Gary.
My pleasure.
Let's take a short break.
Can you tell me a little about the jobs you've held?
Certainly. How far back would you like me to go?
Tell me about the two jobs you held before your current job.
All right. Well, from 1991 to 1994, I was an assistant manager at a food processing plant in New Jersey. I was in charge of scheduling workers on the assembly line. Then, at the end of 1994, I took a position as general manager with Ace Foods. I held that position until I moved to my current position in 1997.
And what were your responsibilities as general manager?
As general manager, I made sure production schedules were met.
Gary 提示.
Welcome back. It's time for Gary's Tips. What's your topic for today, Gary?
Today, I'll be talking about describing your job history. Last week, we talked about how to talk about your educational background in a job interview. Often you will be asked in a job interview to describe your job history. An interviewer might ask you to describe the previous jobs you have held. In your description, you should say what your job title was, where you worked, when you held the position, and what your job responsibilities were. Let's listen to a portion of the business dialogue where Ms. White tells about her job at a food processing plant. Try to answer these two questions. What was Ms. White's job title? Where did she work? Let's listen.
Tell me about the two jobs you held before your current job.
All right. Well, from 1991 to 1994, I was an assistant manager at a food processing plant in New Jersey.
What was Ms. White's job title? She was assistant manager. Where did she work? Ms. White didn't give the name of the company, but she said she worked at a food processing plant in New Jersey. Listen again to part of the dialogue and answer these two questions. When did Ms. White work as assistant manager?
What were Ms. White's responsibilities? Let's listen.
Well, from 1991 to 1994, I was an assistant manager at a food processing plant in New Jersey. I was in charge of scheduling workers on the assembly line.
When was Ms. White assistant manager? She was assistant manager from 1991 to 1994. And what were Ms. White's responsibilities? She was in charge of scheduling workers. Well, that's all we have time for today. I hope today's tips were helpful.
Thanks very much, Gary.
Yo Elizabeth 采访先锋技术公司的副总裁 Shirley Graham.
Our guest today is Ms. Shirley Graham. Ms. Graham is Senior Vice President at Advanced Technologies. Good evening, Ms. Graham. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
We have already met Mike Epstein, who is a Senior Systems Engineer at your company. He explained to us how he met Charles Blake in China at a trade show.Mr. Epstein was interested in purchasing industrial robots from Mr. Blake's company for one of your factories.
Yes, that's right. Mr. Epstein felt that the industrial robots would increase productivity at our new factory.
And you were also involved in the negotiations about the robots?
Yes, I was. Both Mr. Epstein and I met with Mr. Blake when he visited our company.
We'll be talking more about those meetings in the coming weeks.Let's tell our listeners a little about your work at Advanced Technologies. As Vice President, what are your main responsibilities?
One thing I do is oversee our manufacturing plants and facilities. Last year, we built a new factory, and of course, we're always modernizing our existing facilities.
I see. And what are your main concerns in the construction of a new factory?
That's a very complex question. Of course, one concern is keeping costs within limits.We also have to be concerned with a design that will help improve our productivity and provide flexibility for the future.
How many people work for you?
Well, I have 5 senior engineers who report directly to me, including Mike Epstein. I also have my own support staff.
Before coming to Advanced Technologies, what did you do?
I worked for Boston Electronics for 5 years.
And what did you do there?
I was in charge of marketing.
Why did you leave?
I felt that I could handle more responsibility, and the company wasn't growing at that time, so I began looking for a new position.
Did you work with an executive recruiter?
Yes, I did. She was very helpful. She told me that there was a position opening up at Advanced Technologies.
What attracted you to Advanced Technologies?
The opportunities for growth and for greater responsibility.
I see. Do you feel that you made a good choice?
Oh, definitely.My work is challenging, and I'm well rewarded.
Where do you live?
My husband and I live in Woodside. That's a little town about 30 miles south of San Francisco.
Oh, what does your husband do?
He's a high school teacher.
And what do you like to do in your free time?
Well, my husband and I both love horseback riding. We don't have any children, so we spend a lot of time with the horses.
Where do you go riding?
We ride in the hills above Woodside.
How interesting. Well, thank you, Ms. Graham.
听众电话
Let's open up the phone lines and see if we have any callers. Caller number 1, you're on the air with Functioning in Business.
Hello, I have a question for Ms. Graham. What is your educational background? What prepared you to handle your current position?
I graduated from Mills College in 1988 with a business major. Then I worked for several years in sales and marketing.In 1990, I went back to school to get my MBA.
Where did you go?
I went to the University of Pennsylvania.
I see. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today.
It was my pleasure, Elizabeth.
文化点滴
Hello again. We're here with Gary Engleton, our business language expert.Let's look at our email questions, Gary.
All right.
Our first question is it common for a woman to be a manager in the U.S.?
In fields such as law and medicine, the percentage of women is increasing quickly. However, in corporations, there are still not many women in the top jobs.
Here's another question. Is women's pay equal to men's?
In corporations, women still generally make less than men. Pay equality is an important issue in business.
And one more question. Is it difficult for a woman to supervise men?
Some men don't like to have a female boss, but that's changing.
In my experience, most of the men I supervise accept me as their supervisor.
Yes, I think most men today are quite comfortable with a woman as a supervisor.
Let's take a break, Gary.
Okay.
Hi, my name's Fred Jones.
Hello, Fred. I'm Sue Carter.
Nice to meet you, Sue.
Nice to meet you too, Fred. What type of work are you in?
I work for Ace Department Stores in New York. I'm a sales manager.
I work in sales too. I'm the sales rep for Acme Electronics in Philadelphia.
How do you like living in Philadelphia?
Philadelphia is great. The people are very nice.
Have you lived there a long time?
No, I just moved there 2 years ago. How about you? Do you like living in New York City?
Well, the weather is terrible, but I love the theaters and restaurants.
Do you go to the theater a lot?
Yes, my wife and I see a lot of plays. New York is great.
Gary 提示。 这次我们请Gary谈一谈工商人士之间应当怎样谈论私事。
Welcome back. It's time for Gary's Tips. What's your topic for today, Gary?
Today I'll be talking about personal questions in business settings. Personal questions are questions about your living situation, family, and interests. Some personal questions are safe to ask, and others are not so safe. When you're in a business setting, it's best to stick to safe topics. Some safe topics are where someone lives, how long the person has lived there, and what interests a person has. Let's listen to the business dialogue again. In the conversation, Fred asks Sue how she likes living in Philadelphia and how long she's lived there. Let's listen.
I'm the sales rep for Acme Electronics in Philadelphia.
How do you like living in Philadelphia?
Philadelphia is great. The people are very nice.
Have you lived there a long time?
No, I just moved there 2 years ago.
Then Sue asks Fred if he likes living in New York. She also asks him a question about his interest in the theater. Let's listen.
How about you? Do you like living in New York City?
Well, the weather is terrible, but I love the theaters and restaurants.
Do you go to the theater a lot?
Yes, my wife and I see a lot of plays. New York is great.
There are some topics which are not safe to ask someone unless you know the person very well. You shouldn't ask if someone is married, or about the person's age or religion, or about how much money a person makes or spends. It's also a bad idea to talk about politics in business situations. It is much better to stay with very safe topics. Well, that's all we have time for today. I hope today's tips were helpful.
Thanks very much, Gary. Well, our time is up. Tune in again next time for Functioning in Business. See you then.
今天的商务通英语就复习到这里，谢谢各位收听，我们下星期再见。For
further study, a Functioning in Business study kit is available from your local bookstore.
为了帮助学习，商务通英语备有课本和录音带，整套辅导学习材料，听众可以去本地的书店购买。
国之音继续播报新闻。台湾国防部长严德发二日接受媒体询问时表示，考虑到新冠病毒疫情的严重性，原本规划今年上半年举行的汉光演习电脑兵棋推演，将评估推迟到下半年实施。台湾军方每年都会举行例行性的汉光军事演习，这项演习分为两个阶段，一个阶段是电脑兵棋推演，另一个阶段是实兵演练。严德发部长还指出，电脑兵棋推演是在密闭式空间举行，参与的人员都是军队的重要干部，在执行的过程当中将会做一些安全上的调整。目前台湾军方每天都在召开防疫会议，严德发提出了守住健康就是守住国防的最高指示，营区内也建制了隔离营舍，以因应疫情发展的需要。总部设在堪培拉的澳大利亚战略政策学会于3月1号发表的一项研究报告指出，中国当局把在新疆在教育营中关押的维吾尔族和其他少数民族的公民转移到世界各地，让他们在一些世界知名品牌的工厂中强迫劳动。这份报告估计，2017年至2019年间，至少有8万多维吾尔人从新疆转移到中国各地的工厂工作，其中一些人直接从拘留营被遣送出来，实际数字可能要高得多。在远离家乡的工厂里，他们通常住在隔离的宿舍里，在工作时间外接受有组织的普通话和思想训练，受到持续的监视，并被禁止参加宗教仪式。包括政府文件在内的许多资料表明，这些调来的维吾尔族工人被指派的看护人员监管，行动自由有限，无异于强迫劳动。这份报告呼吁中国允许跨国公司不受限制地进入中国工厂，调查任何可能发生的虐待或强迫劳动事件，并要求企业进行审计和人权尽职调查。印第安纳州南本德市前市长皮特·布蒂吉格放弃了在2020年赢得白宫的希望。布蒂吉格的竞选团队星期天晚上宣布，他将退出民主党总统竞选。此前他在星期六的南卡罗莱纳州初选中令人失望地取得了第四名，没有赢得任何党代表票。上个月布里吉格险胜爱荷华州党内投票，又在新罕布什尔州初选中赢得了非常接近第一名的成绩，此后他的选情迅速看涨。但伯尼桑德斯咄咄逼人的作风和进步派的思想，以及乔拜登的施政经验和非裔美国人的支持，很快就淹没了布里吉格所传达的温和和团结的信息，再加上布里吉格的知名度毕竟不高。布里吉格才38岁，他还年轻，在民主党圈子里已经名声赫起，这意味着他不太可能再回到政治默默无闻的状态。与此同时，在本周的超级星期二选举中，在南卡罗莱纳州初选中轻松获胜的拜登将面临桑德斯的挑战，届时将有14个州举行初选，超过33%的党代表票数可供争夺。目前受新冠病毒袭击的国家数量攀升至60多个，全世界的死亡人数至少达到了3000人。法国巴黎的卢浮宫是蒙娜丽莎和其他无价艺术瑰宝的家乡。据美联社报道，由于该博物馆的工作人员担心受到来自世界各地游客的感染，卢浮宫被关闭。工作人员还对来自意大利的博物馆工作人员表示关注，他们来到卢浮宫收回在这里借展的达芬奇的作品。卢浮宫是世界上最受欢迎的博物馆，去年共接待游客960万人次，其中近3/4来自国外。上周六，法国政府决定禁止5000人以上的室内公共集会，随后卢浮宫被关闭。在法国，巴黎大主教告诉教区牧师，把圣餐面包放在信徒的手中，而不是他们的嘴里。法国官员还建议人们在问候他人时不要亲吻脸颊。据韩联社报道，韩国二日上午的新冠病毒新增确诊病例476例，累计确诊病例4212例，死亡22例。以上是新闻播报，感谢收听。
以下为您重播美国之音 VOA 卫视时事大家谈节目，因为是节目录音，请您不要拨打电话。
观众朋友们好，欢迎收看 VOA 卫视2月26号星期三的时事大家谈，我是许波，我们在美国之音华盛顿演播室为您现场报道。中共周日在北京召开新冠肺炎疫情防控和经济社会发展工作部署会议，中央政治局常委全数出席，并通过视频与全国各地连线，总共有17万各级官员听取了这个习近平发表的政策宣示，规模前所未见。受武汉疫情冲击，中共专制集权体制备受指责，习近平的党内核心地位一度受损。这次会议上，习近平强调党中央对疫情判断准确，工作部署及时，采取措施有效，再次彰显他亲自指挥和亲自部署。那么习近平闻过是非能否服众，他的一尊地位能否真正得到巩固，中共应如何在这次惨痛的疫情问题上吸取教训呢？我们今天就邀请专家跟大家一起来讨论这些问题。在美国新泽西州通过电话连线加入我们访谈的是中国战略分析杂志社社长李伟东，李先生你好。
徐博好，观众朋友们好。
在纽约通过视频连线加入我们访谈的是中国民主党全国委员会主席王军涛，王博士您好。
主持人好，大家好，伟东先生好。
我们欢迎两位嘉宾，同时呢，我们也欢迎听众、观众及网友朋友们通过 VOA 卫视在 YouTube 上的网上直播收看并加入我们的现场讨论。我们的网址是 youtube.com/VOAChina。同时，我们欢迎大家拨打美国之音热线电话来参加我们节目的讨论。17万人大会，规模是空前的。我来请教新泽西州的李伟东先生。疫情初期，我们看到习近平一度消失了一段时间，自2月中旬视察北京之后，他开始活跃起来。那么这次高调亮相，传递什么信息？李先生，
首先是向世人宣示他的一尊地位还在，然后他还在亲自指挥，但是呢，前一段时间出现的中央和地方互相甩锅，就是这个锅到底谁来背？这种事情也热闹了一阵。现在看呢，这个中央不肯背锅，然后他自己出来亲自主持，这个事实已经出现了。刚才你提到说他神隐了一段时间，我相信那个时候他是这个心胸郁结吧，就是很愤怒，觉得被地方或者被这个卫生组织的一些官员糊弄了或者怎么样。然后这个有可能身体出现了一些问题，但是呢，如果说这个他的这个一尊地位就是，由于那一段神隐和前段时间造成的重大失误，就受到了多么严重的挑战，这个也未必，因为这个自从李克强大年初一被任命为这个防疫小组的组长以后。李克强除了去这个武汉视察了一次，露了一次面，做了点鼓劲之外，再就听不到他的声音。这个而且习一直在背后遥控。李克强刚去武汉，这个回来好像就那个前后，习亲自接见世卫组织的这个总干事，然后就宣布他自己在亲自指挥。所以呢，这个舆论上、民间舆论上对他的一些指责和这个批评，以及国际舆论的批评，可能对他，对全党的这些党员也好，或者民众也好，心理上产生一些影响。但是实质性的动摇可能还没有发生。现在又回来重新掌控局面，大概是这样。
好的，我们现在呢，我们现在已经有这个听众、观众、网友朋友们等候在电话线上，要求参加我们节目讨论。这样，我在这个请教。王博士之前呢，我先来接一个电话，是北京的朱先生。北京朱先生你好。北京的朱先生请讲。
这有一个案子，就是你们美国之音曾经做过一个节目，就是2018年10月份那个中央电视台的那个崔永元做过一期关于最高法那个司法腐败的那个关于陕西省 那姓赵的那个所以说我说今天这个期节目就17万人大会一言堂这个问题，那么大会一言堂你一个人讲，大你是让大家无条件执行呢，还是由谁来承担应当各自承担的责任呢？其实这是个形式，不解决任何实际的防疫的问题，您说呢？
好的，我们理解您的观点了，谢谢，谢谢朱先生。好，我来继续请教王军涛博士。那么这一次习近平讲话呢，洋洋洒洒，据说是近万言。但是有人注意到，有关疫情防控这部分呢，他基本上是重复了这个中共党刊《求是》2月3号发表的他的一篇讲话的内容。我来请教纽约的王军涛博士啊，习近平他反复强调的是什么？他需要让外界注意到什么呢？
其实我觉得他想传递的呢是两个非常明确的信息。第一个信息就是他在总体评估共产党前期工作，就以他为核心的共产党前期工作中呢，疫情的判断是准确的，工作是及时到位的，措施是有力有效的，那么想让全党统一这个思想，在这个方面呢，因为他是发现在前一段时间这个思想实际上比较混乱，按他的想法思想比较混乱，而是大家看到现实之后实际上跟这个不符合，所以他要强行统一。第二个呢，他就是想推出他的复工的决定，因为关于复工不复工呢，大家也有很多争论。因为习近平啊有两句话，就是关于疫情，刚才你讲致疫时候有两句话是相互冲突的，一句话呢就是坚决的要把人民的健康和生命放在第一位，有效的遏制疫情势头。但大家就知道，如果是传染病要这样的话，如果这个情况就得要比较大范围的有可能传染的时候就要做隔离，要做一些，就要对生产和生活秩序不能够去恢复正常的这种生产和生活秩序。但另一方面呢，习近平呢要强迫大家在后面要现在要进行复工，这样的话就使得一线领导啊和在做前面的人呢就感到很为难。习近平是强行统一思想，就是说一定要大家复工。实际上我觉得这次会议呢主要是这两个信息。但姿态上呢，为什么他不用采取比如像《求是》杂志他发了文，他其实在这个过程中间他也是通过正常渠道下发过文件，他发现呢这个混乱，但是他不是说他这个指示本身有问题，他抱怨的是呢可能省市两级领导对他指示打折扣，所以他用求是杂志发过效果也不好，所以这次他搞了一个这17万人的会议，想一统到底，把他的这个想法呢让17万的这个县团级的干部都知道，实际上这些干部就有一个职责。而且他在这里发出了一个信息，就是说在这个疫情中间他要提拔干部，要摘帽子和戴帽子，这样就使得这些县团级的干部能够跟着他的脚步走，不要去听一些省市两级干部的这个动摇啊混乱的想法。
好的，那我们下面就看看习近平对中共领导的这个抗疫情工作的这个评价。他说，党中央对于疫情形势的判断是准确的，各项工作部署是及时的，采取的措施是有力有效的，防控工作取得的成效再次彰显了中国共产党领导和中国特色社会主义制度的显著优势。我来请教李先生，习近平这样说，武汉人民同意吗？中国人民同意吗？啊，李先生您同意吗？
首先我不同意。我觉得武汉很多人可能也不同意。这个早期是及时的准确的这个评价实在是自我抬高，或者文过是非。早期这个首先这个李文亮的事件大家都已经看到了，这个前一段时间这个有很多纪念，这个把最早的吹哨人这个训诫，然后上中央电视台，这个是习近平这个下面的这样一个集权体制一向的做法了。那么这个做法本身这个导致的这个问题就是让大家失去警惕。这个最重要的就世卫组织最近用的一个说法叫窗口期，就是从12月8号第一个病例，现在说是12月1号，第一个病例，到这个1月23号的封城，或者1月20号习近平，发起这个重视这件事儿，下达正式的指示， 这中间过去了差不多五十天的情况。这五十天当中呢，前二三十天可能这个武汉说只有44个病例的时候，可能大家注意力不够，或者疫情还没有真正蔓延开来，失去一些警惕，有情可原。但是这个到12月底，李文亮呢明确发现已经有人传人，这个而且在推特上，这个不是对不起，微信上，说这个出现新 SARS， 然后呢内部也有一个叫张成先的上报明确人传人。这个时候到1月20号之间，这20天是最关键的窗口期。
嗯。
但是这个中央政府和这个所有好几级官员都采取了封口措施，这个而且没有采取最起码的二级响应，就是说疫情看着不太严重的情况下，也应该给予一定的响应，呼吁大家洗手、戴口罩，这个回避去医院，医院医护人员做好防卫这个准备，全国内部调动物资资源开始应对这个事情，都没有，一直到春节团拜会都一次不提。这个对疫情的这个耽误，至少这个造成了多出一倍人的死亡和多出一倍人的感染。
嗯，
当然不是说这个采取了一些措施就一定会完全把它封堵在武汉，这个也很难做到。这个病毒的厉害，最近我们这两个多月看得也很清楚。这个武汉这样一个九省通衢的一个城市，这个病毒流散出去，到12月底，至少潜在的感染人数已经接近上万了。
嗯，
应该是这样一个局面。那么完全堵住的可能性不是很大，但是减少这个损失的可能性是非常高的，特别是中央应该检讨的，不要甩锅给地方。
嗯，
就是什么人决定让他们上电视，这个披露这个李文亮被训诫这件事情，中央电视台的传播和在武汉一个地方的一个压制言论造成的后果是完全不同的。中央电视台的传播压制全国人民的舆论，包括知情权，导致的这个大家松懈，还要热热闹闹过年，这是一个重大的责任。中央的责任，那当然习近平要来承担了。
那么疫情呢，我们看到给中国经济和社会造成了巨大的损失和冲击，让中国人民，尤其是武汉和湖北人民，付出了惨重的代价。可是我们却没有看到习近平有一句深刻的反思或者检讨，相反，人们听到的完全是他对党中央的溢美之词和对自己的评功摆好。那我来请教王博士，习近平这样做对他自己、对中共、对中国人民来说，您觉得公平吗？
我觉得现在呢，习近平的这番讲话不是公平和对他自己公平不公平的问题，而是呢，他也不是一个简单的在闻过是非，想让大家把错误变成正确的问题，而是呢，这个人很无耻。就是他在掩盖自己错的时候，实际上他想让继续自己的错误。因为我们知道呢，在这场治疫中间呢，其实疫情从哪儿来的，我觉得这个问题其实呢，对传染病专家来说重要，对防控呢是比较重要，因为他要搞清路径。但另一方面呢，这次呢能够这个疫情失控的话，实际上是习近平呢个人要承担很大的责任。他当时因为要让中国人做他的中国梦，这个中国梦有两个百年梦，第一个百年梦就要在共产党2021年建党100周年之后实现小康。那么我们可以看到，在这个1月22号时候，孙春兰到湖北和武汉现场之后，还在传他的指示，要保障人民过一个祥和安定的春节，要保障正常的生产和生活秩序。其实就是在这个时候，他还没有去按照传染病防治的要求去布置治疫工作。到1月23号，他发表那个新春贺词，那还在说5000年来中国人的小康梦就要在明年实现，今年是决胜的关键年，所以他完全不提质疑，就是因为他这个失策。但是他现在呢，其实他还想坚持错误，就体现在要复工。我刚才讲了，这个他在这个讲话中间，17万人会场，就是两个信息：一，以前的决策是对的；二，今后呢，重点要推动复工。在这个方面呢，质疑方面其实他没什么多说，他把国务院的一些说法跟他原来不一样说法结合起来，然后呢。但是下一步他主要谈的几项措施都是复工，在这个，但是我们知道传染病的这个大规模的传播的话，是隔离的话，实际上如果在你不知道传播的路径，还不知道这个还有多少病源时候，你就开始推动复工，这个实际上是要全国人民的生命和健康要冒一个很大的风险。那么当然复工之后还有一个问题，就是说你的这些防疫的这种设备和东西能不能到位，
现在我们都知道中国现在生产的防疫啊等等这样的一些设备和这个服装啊等等这些，连一线工作的医护人员都很紧张，都没有保证。你说这个大规模复工，这些人更不可能有一个足够的保证。我们就是有一个参照器来说，就以当时在日本那个钻石公主号，它有3711人在船上，它那么多人的传染后，日本按照严格的国际规范，最后人家问日本的这个政府说，你们为什么不在第一时间的时候呢对他们一次性做检查，日本政府说我们做不到，能力上做不到，你日本这么科技这么发达这么好的条件，他都不可能对3711人做一次性的检查。中国现在这么大范围的老百姓连排查工作都没做完呢，他就要求推动大规模复工，而且在没有足够的防护设备下和这个措施下，实际上他是拿中国人的生命和健康做一场豪赌。因为呢，他跟电话中跟川普总统说，川普总统也相信，也说他的话，到4月份天气变暖之后，疫情会消失。因为他在赌什么？赌呼吸道疾病，他可能是季节性的，到时候会消失。但是我们知道，西班牙流感是搞了18个月，它是消失了，后来也不治就消失了，但死了5000万到1亿人。所以我觉得其实习近平现在不是个简单的无耻，不是一个简单的文过追，他要继续错误。而且他无耻到什么程度呢？他要说要搞一批暖人心的新闻来引导舆论，要新闻要有温度，还要有泪点。那赵高我们知道在指鹿为马的时候，他是要用恐吓的心理，要威慑，让大家呢用一种恐吓来附和他指鹿为马。这个习近平还让大家哭着相信他是对的，所以我说他这个是个非常无耻的一个人。
好的，我们现在再接一个电话，是上海的唐先生。但是在接您电话之前，唐先生，我要对您说句话。我们今天讨论习近平呢，您作为习近平的著名粉丝来到我们节目当中啊，我们欢迎，我们也不反对呢您赞美习近平，但是请您不要用文革式的语言来煽动性的语言来说那样的话。好的，唐先生，您可以发言。
我的每一句话应该都是这个走势的。从这个最近这个两广福建来看，已经连续10多天是零病例了。然后呢，就是说即使在热带地区啊，比如说新加坡啊这样一些热带地区，虽然有很多输入性病例，但是它也没有出现这个社区传播。所以说呢，基本上现在这个就是说温度提高了以后啊，这个病毒的传播能力啊自然就下降了。所以说这个伟大领袖复工的决策是肯定英明的，而且很多底层的人，如果你不复工的话，他没有收入，他不病死他也饿死了，对不对？
好的，
所以说这个复工也是没有办法的事情。
好，
另外呢，
谢谢。
就是说我们看到这个解放军啊，已经订了140万套防弹衣了，看样子供应赴台的伟大斗争啊，马上就要。
我们谢谢唐先生的评论。
习主席的竞争地位也会。
谢谢唐先生的评论。下面呢，我抓紧时间给大家读几段网评。首先是周嘉诚。他说：“我们国家只允许一种声音，这个声音就是习主席的声音。习主席的声音动听、伟大、正确。习主席一声令下，构建人类命运共同体，现场让全世界一起感染、一起爆发、一起抗疫。现在不是实现了吗？中国良心，习近平的一尊地位本来就是自封的，并没有得到中国人民的认可，就是体制内的官员也是口服心不服，所以也就不存在这个受损和巩固的问题了。”闵立信他说，习近平骨子里十分崇拜毛泽东，从其所作所为的表现来看，很有毛泽东情节。为了强化个人权威，巩固自己的地位，他也可能效法毛泽东，不惜开历史倒车，重回文革时代。好的，我们很多人呢都把这次中共的17万人这个大会同1962年1月举行的那个中共7000人大会做比较。刚才我们一位网友闵立信呢，他说习近平骨子里呢就非常崇拜毛泽东。那么我们看看当年毛泽东是怎么做的。当年以毛泽东在党内外的威望，他尚且不得不为3年大饥荒来承担责任、检讨，并且暂时退居二线了。我来请教李先生，现在习近平这样做，他能轻松过关吗？中国人民会答应吗？历史会答应吗？
历史肯定不会答应，但是中国人民没有多少权力答不答应。而且我认为他已经过关了，就从政治角度上说啊，一尊地位受点损，受点污，
但是呢并没有被动摇。7年前2013年我就说过他是一个深度毛粉，这个当时引起了拥护他的这个人的这个强烈的反对。我也说他要建一个红色帝国，我这个观点已经说了多少次了。那么这次呢，这个他采取这样一个17万人电视大会的一个形式，像刚才军涛说的一统到底，来贯彻两个意思，一个是中央这个从来就是正确的，就是党就是从来就是伪光正的党没错，这是一个意思。第二个意思呢是强调复工，但是在复工这个角度上说呢，我不完全持批评态度，因为这个确实是再不复工没有吃的或者这个各种各样的问题，这个都会产生，而且这个强制封城、强制封闭这样的情况本来就已经带来了，每天都带来铺天盖地的人道灾难。这个复工和这个控制疫情确实会成为一个执政当局的两难选择。但是我相信到2月底前或3月初，复工肯定会在全国推动起来。那么相应的防范呢也会有，在爆发这个聚集性的这个感染的这个危险也非常高。但是在两难选择下，不复工就可能饿死，不复工全年的经济就可能垮掉。这个复工的话呢带来风险，然后局部再防控。这样的这个彼此之间的纠缠的决策和内在的这个搏斗，可能会持续到4月底或者5月初。这个才能够慢慢的把它缓解下来。但是现在冒险复工恐怕已经成为一个定局。
好的，我们在请教王博士之前，我再来接几个电话。我们不让我们的电话这个等候，我们不要我们的听众观众朋友们在电话上等候时间过长。澳大利亚的吴先生，吴先生你好。
好，你好。主持人好，
请讲。
我就是针对刚才就是这一次习近平在17万人的大会上所谓做的，他的判断是正确的，什么措施是得力的，这个几个点，从另外一个角度讲，那如果既然他这么讲了，代表中央他也是这么认为的，都是他从头到尾亲自的领导亲力亲为的。那我们就认可他这个话，那你这个话说，现在全世界人都看到了中国的疫情产生了什么样的结果，武汉人死了多少人，湖北人人道的灾难出现了多少，那么是不是代表就是说你中央你的措施你的判断认为这一些人命死去的人命人道的灾难你们都认为是应该的，那你们怎么对这一个来解释？
好的，谢谢。
对这一点产生这个后果你怎么来交代？
好的，谢谢吴先生。北京的李先生，李先生你好。
哎，你好。那个我呢是在体制内的一个高校工作，前天这个习近平开了这个中共开了这个17万人的这个复工大会啊。这个十七万这个党员大会啊，就从开完了以后，从昨天我们，因为我们现在还因为学校可能相对来说可能复课的这个时间可能会比较靠后，然后就连续发了一堆的文件。昨天发的文件主要就是加强这个政治思想的这个东西，然后还要发挥这个教师啊这个舆论引领的这种作用。然后呢今天又发了一个就是关于这个征集这个疫情防控和推动社会经济秩序恢复的这么一个决策。我觉得啊，就是因为这里边呢林林总总一共包含了得方面挺多的，包括对于这个疫情防控的这个短板有什么建议，还有这个企业复工，还有中小企业的这个什么，还有包括一些舆论的这个怎么去引导，还有两会延迟对社会有影响。我觉得啊，现在就是这个咱们这位一尊啊，他除了会说这些官话空话，他脑子啊就是一团浆糊，他现在就是在赌啊。刚才王军涛博士说的非常对，就是他就是现在在赌博啊。他一个是在赌这个天气，再有一个他就是赌这个，我个人觉得就是在赌这个美国这个瑞德西韦这个药是不是能够真正能管用。
好，今天时事大家谈讨论到这里就结束了，时间关系不能一一宣读网友们的所有评论及回答网友们提出的所有问题。我们感谢李伟东先生、 王军涛博士参加我们的节目。我是许波，下次节目再会。